Good morning. How's everyone doing? Now the crowd has spoken. We brought back Smoke Alarms and Flies from 2016. This one was a request. Who remembers this sermon besides Mary? First time at Awaken, she said, please, can you do this one again? Here we are, Smoke Alarms and Flies, which for 2023 I have renamed to Smoke Alarms and Flies in New York State Taxes. We're in this series, Greatest Hits. I'm pulling some of my favorite sermons that I have given since 2007. Today, Smoke Alarms and Flies from Advent 2016, which means we will be having a Christmas sermon today. We okay with that? Can we do Christmas in August? Now, this series that I was in for Advent 2016 was titled Waiting for Hope. I think at this point, this was pre-life, actually. Wait, no. This would have been life because it was Mary's first time. So I think this was right about the beginning of our time across the street in life. The series, the question that I raised throughout this entire series was, how does the story of Jesus' birth bring hope 2,000 years later? 4 weeks all about hope, and how do we bring that hope into our lives for 2023? Now, for this sermon, Smoke Alarms and Flies, I feel like I say this every single week, but this is one of my favorite stories of the Bible. It's the story of Zechariah. Now, Zechariah is the father of John the Baptist. John the Baptist is the cousin of Jesus. What all four Gospels tell us about John the Baptist is that he prepares the way for Jesus. This is how Luke begins the story of Jesus, with his cousin, John the Baptist, who is preparing the way, but he even goes back further than simply John the Baptist. He goes to his father, and he talks about the circumstances surrounding John's birth. Now, his occupation is a priest at the temple, and he has just clocked in. He's just punched his time card when all of a sudden an angel appears to him. And here's how Luke tells the story. Then an angel of the Lord appeared to Zechariah, standing at the right side of the altar of incense. When Zechariah saw him, he was startled, and he was gripped with fear. But the angel said to him, don't be afraid, Zechariah. Your prayer has been heard. Your wife. So apparently, he's been praying for a son. Apparently, this is something that he has been hoping for and praying for. And the angel knows this. God has heard Zechariah's prayer. Who knows how long? Zechariah is older in age. He might have been praying this prayer for decades. We're not told how long, but this is a hope. This is a dream that he has buried deep, deep within his heart. And the angel says, don't be afraid. Your prayer has been heard. Your wife, Elizabeth, will bear you a son, and you are to name him John. Because I guess the angel couldn't come up with a more diverse name than that. Now, John will be a joy and a delight to you, and many will rejoice because of his birth. For he will be great in the sight of the Lord. He is never to take wine or other fermented drink, and he will be filled with the Holy Spirit even before he is born. He will bring back many of the people of Israel to the Lord their God, and he will go on before the Lord in the spirit and power of Elijah to turn the hearts of the parents to their children and the disobedient to the wisdom of the righteous to, and here's that phrase that every gospel uses, make ready a people prepared for the Lord. You're going to have a son. And he is going to prepare the people for Jesus. That's to be his role. That's the thing that he is going to do with his life. And Zechariah asked the angel, because you know how this works. When you've been praying something for 20 years, and all of a sudden it's right there, it's dangling in front of you, the question you're going to ask is the same question that Zechariah is asking, how can I be sure of this? Are you sure? There's been many moments of disappointment. Think about the things that you desire deep in your heart. Maybe there were moments when it felt like you could touch that hope or that dream, and then it vanished right in front of you, and you were left waiting again. You were left hoping. Maybe for a season you stopped praying, or you buried that hope down because you thought, it's just one too many disappointments. I am not going to put myself out there again. There's no way this will ever come to pass. Zechariah, he's human, like us. He asks a very human, ordinary, normal, valid question. How can I be sure of this? How will I know that this is true? I'm an old man, and my wife is well along in years. And the angel said to him, well, I'm Gabriel. That's how you're going to know it's true. I'm Gabriel. As if that answers all of his questions. I stand in the presence of God, and I have been sent to speak to you and to tell you this good news. And now you will be silent and not able to speak until the day this happens, because you did not believe my words, which will come true at their appointed time. This is an odd story. The Bible is filled with these odd stories. This is a weird story. And it raises the question, why was Zechariah silenced for 9 months? Is this a punishment? What's going on here? What did he do besides just simply ask a follow-up question? And then another question, why isn't Mary silenced when this angel appears to her and tells her about the birth of Jesus? Because she questions the angel as well. Here's Mary. How will this be? Mary, is this not the same question? How will this be? For Zechariah, it was, well, I'm old, my wife is old. For Mary, how will this be since I am a virgin? And the angel answered, the Holy Spirit will come on you. He gives this whole explanation. Mary then answers, I'm the Lord's servant. May your word to me be fulfilled. Then the angel left her. Well, Zechariah, it's almost as if he didn't have an opportunity to respond. So why was Zechariah silenced, but Mary wasn't? Why was Mary given an opportunity to respond to the angel and to, in the words of Mission Impossible, accept her mission? But Zechariah was simply silenced right there on the spot. You shall not speak again until this comes to pass. Now, the traditional understanding of this, it's because of the condition of their hearts. Zechariah was a bit more bitter, a bit more disgruntled, but Mary was open and she was receptive. But where does it say that in the text? Where does it say that? I don't read that anywhere in Luke's story. This is how commentators try to answer the question, but the more I sat with this explanation, the less satisfied I was. No, I think there's something more going on here. And I remember this story really bothered me. What did Zechariah do? It's a normal question. What did he do? I sat with this story for a while, and then I came to an answer or an understanding that opened up the story in a whole new way for me. That is how this sermon was birthed 7 years ago. So let me take you back to Advent 2016. We're going to need sound for this one. I went to search for my old audio, and this has disappeared into Neverland. I have the audio from the week before and the week after. I don't have audio from, let's see, what was it? December 11th, 2016. What we'll have to do is we're going to have to step into a time machine and travel back in time. Gone back about a year. We have now entered Advent 2016, December 11th. Oh, that makes me laugh. Now we're stuck on the time loop. What year shall we go to next? If maybe we can fast forward this. There we go. So I entered Advent 2016 like I do every single Advent with extremely high expectations. This is going to be the year that I really experience Christmas. That I really experience Advent and immerse myself in what it means that Jesus was born 2,000 years ago. I'm going to feel the spirit of Advent. I planned my calendar accordingly. We had the Awaken Christmas party early in the month. All my shopping was done early in December. Everything was taken care of. We had planned. Now, this was pre-kids. Steph and I had planned a trip with my sister and my brother-in-law to go away for a weekend to a Christmas town to really celebrate Christmas. There were going to be more Christmas movies, not necessarily Hallmark movies, unless if you ask Steph, and then it'd be like two Hallmark movies a day. There was going to be more Christmas spirit, more events, more activities. This was going to be the year that I would truly experience Christmas. But then life happened. As it does. You all know how this is. You have expectations. Maybe you had expectations for this summer. This was going to be the summer that I was just going to chill and relax and refresh, rest, and enjoy the rays. And then life happens. I had a whole bunch of yard work that had to get done. I decided to start this, we'll call it the Stones Under the Deck Project, where I had pounds and pounds of these stones dropped off in my driveway. I had to throw them in a wheelbarrow and then wheel them across the yard to throw them underneath the deck where all of these weird insects were nesting. This took longer than I thought. Then my sister got sick, and we didn't go away to this Christmas town to celebrate Christmas for the weekend. Because she got sick, I said, well, you know what I can do? I can get caught up on a few quick house projects. Quick house projects. The first project I decided to tackle was the smoke alarms. We had a few older smoke alarms in the house. This is actually not one of them. I Googled antique smoke alarm, and this is what came up. Because that's what we had. We had antique smoke alarms. And I didn't know if they were working. I decided I'm going to have to change the batteries on these smoke alarms because I'm going to want to make sure that they're working. Because at this point, we knew that Reese was on the way. So before you have a child, you want to make sure all the safety features in your house are all up to code and everything is doing okay. Smoke alarms were on the top of the list. Now, this particular smoke alarm, it was on the highest part of the ceiling of our house. I couldn't just reach up. I couldn't get a step stool. I had to actually borrow a ladder from my neighbor in order to climb up to the top, probably about 15 feet high. I borrowed the ladder. I had it set up on the floor. I was ready to go. I was going to tackle this. 15 minutes, I was going to be out the door doing whatever I was going to be doing. I get up there, and I start pulling on this smoke alarm, and it does not want to come off the ceiling. Little did I know, these smoke alarms had no batteries because they were hardwired in and there was no battery backup in these antique smoke alarms. I'm pulling on this thing. I'm trying to get it down 15 minutes, 20 minutes. I'm getting upset. I'm starting to sweat. Even though it's the middle of the winter, I am frustrated beyond end. That serene, calm, tranquil Christmas spirit I was hoping to have, gone, totally lost. Finally, maybe about a half an hour later of tugging and pulling, I realize, oh, wait, there's no batteries in these things. I can't find a little trap door. They are hardwired into the alarm system of the house. I get on the phone, and I call the alarm company. Because they can't be there in person, they can't help me out. How long do you think I was waiting on the phone for? I don't remember, but I guarantee you it was not 5 minutes. You know how that is. The music, probably Christmas music, is playing at that point. They're trying to keep you calm, and you're like, please, no. I don't want that right now. No. Like, heavy metal might be a little bit better. So they tell me that they can't help me. I realize, all right, I'm going to have to get an electrician because I don't know what I'm doing. Again, I want to make sure that these are safe for my son who's going to be born. An hour and a half later, I put the ladder away, and I move on to the next errand. An hour and a half. This is supposed to be 15 minutes of work. Now, I guess we must have been going somewhere to run this errand because we went down the stairs to go into the garage and then to leave, get in the car to go leave to somewhere else. And here's what I found out. This was before I was taking pictures of things, so this is not a picture of my actual home. I don't have a barn in the back like this picture has. But this is basically what the picture window in our basement looked like. A whole bunch of what are now, I've learned, are called cluster flies. Right there on the window. I get a shoe, I get a newspaper, boom, 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 boom. All right, the flies are gone. Get in the car, and at this point, I am totally frazzled. Run the errand, come back home. The next morning, I wake up, I go down the stairs. What do you think I see at this picture window? More cluster flies. And we're talking a lot. It wasn't two or three flies, like a nuisance. We're talking multitude, like plague level of flies. This was the plague from Exodus that was manifesting itself in my home. Kill all the flies. I think I went to church. This might have been on a Sunday morning. Go to church. Come back later. After dinner, put on a Christmas movie. In the middle of this movie, what do you think I see flying around in front of me? A fly. What do? I pause the movie. And I chased that thing all around the house. And the fly had escaped to the tallest part of the ceiling. I think I might have gotten that ladder out. And 15 minutes, 20 minutes later, whew, I realized, sitting down after all this had happened, the thing I was trying to avoid happened. Here I was. Entering Advent 2016, all these expectations. This is what the season is going to be. I'm prepared. I'm ready for it. I'm going to carry a serene spirit into this season. And it all was turned upside down. Because this is life. We have interruptions that come up, things that you can't plan for. We have that never-ending, always-growing to-do list. You check one thing off of it, and then three more things get added. And there's that feeling of dread and that overwhelming feeling as if, will this list ever end? Will there ever be an end to all the things that have to get done? Now, what about this? Are you like me where you underestimate project length? This is going to take 20 minutes. And you even think, okay, it's going to take 10, but I'm going to buffer in a little extra time, so 20 minutes, and then it takes you 2 hours. You like me in this one? Where no matter what, you are the eternal optimist. That is me. Oh, no, this is 10 minutes. Okay, I'll factor in a half an hour. 2 hours later, I'm still working on the project. We have sickness. We have dreams that lie unfulfilled, that they dredge up all these different feelings and emotions within us so we can be as serene as possible, but then something triggers us and we're reminded and this new emotion arises and we're like, huh, that wasn't here before. What made me feel this way? And then as if all that isn't bad enough, here's what we also have. All the notifications that beep and buzz on your phone, breaking news. Or these are all breaking news. There's going to be a hurricane, snow. We have never-ending streaming services to distract us, to fill the silence in our lives. What about this? Your inbox. Maybe it looks like this. Hopefully it doesn't look like this. The inbox that you clean out and then the emails just keep pouring in. Maybe for you it's not emails. Maybe for you it's your text messages. Those threads that you're on, and you wonder, why am I on this thread? I understand initially why I was on it, but now they're talking about taking their dog to the vet. I don't need to know why Sally took her dog to the vet on Friday and then what the vet said in response to that visit. I don't need to be on this thread. And then for me this week, here's what I had happen. And I took a screenshot of the phone when I was finally done with this conversation. 1 hour and 20 minutes on the phone with New York State dealing with taxes for Awaken. Oh, I'm sorry. This isn't the correct department, but I can transfer you there. I'm sorry. This isn't the correct department, but don't worry. I'll transfer you. I'll put all your information in. Yeah, hello. Can you give me your name and your EIN number? I just gave it to the other person. 1 hour and 20 minutes later, I wasn't planning for this. This is life. We have expectations, dreams for how things are going to go. And then we have the smoke alarms, we have the flies, we have New York State taxes and all the other distractions that pop up along the way. And what happens is, as we go through life, it's easy to feel as if what's right in front of us is all there is. Think about Zechariah for a moment. The angel comes to him, and remember, he had been praying this for a long time. Your prayer has been answered. What does Zechariah do? He looks at what's right in front of him. How can this be? Look at my age. Look at the age of my wife. That's tangible. It's what he can feel. It's what he can see. Something beyond that, it's hard for him to fathom that. Or what about this idea that a savior is going to be born to the people of Israel? Well, the people of Israel had been waiting for a savior for hundreds of years. Think about a hope that had been buried within generations of people. And now it's going to come to pass in my generation? Well, my great-grandfather and his great-grandfather had been praying for this and hoping for this. Why are we the generation that is going to see this dream fulfilled? Yeah, it's easy to just think that what you see in front of you is all that there is. And so when you are presented with something to place your hope in, to place your faith and your trust in, it's hard to see beyond what's right there tangibly in front of you. Because hope is about what you can't see. Hope is about what you can't feel. Hope is about what's not right there in front of you, but it's actually beyond the very things that are right in front of your vision. For Zechariah, he can't see beyond the smoke alarms, the flies, and the hour and 20-minute conversations with New York State. Yeah, we're all like Zechariah. Yeah, we're all like Zechariah. As I sat with this story, this odd, weird, what in the heck kind of a story is this? I began to realize that for Zechariah, his forced silence, it was an act of grace. I know you have all these questions. I know this is what you can feel and what it seems like right now. I know the thing that you really want, the thing that's being promised to you, it feels impossible. Let me remove all these distractions for a season, so that you can hope again. Here's how I say this. Silence is an invitation to see beyond what's in plain sight. Or another way, silence is an opportunity to find hope in something beyond what he can see and what he can touch and what he can feel. It's the same for all of us. We need moments of silence. And no matter how good our intentions are, the interruptions arise. The smoke alarms take longer to fix. The conversation is double, triple the amount of time. Silence is the doorway to hope. Silence is the doorway to hope. Silence is where God does God's work of healing and transformation. Here's Luke in his gospel. Notice this. For Elizabeth, Zechariah's wife, after this, his wife Elizabeth became pregnant, and for 5 months, she remained in seclusion. Didn't go and see anyone. Remained silent for 5 months. What about Mary? At that time, Mary got ready after the angel appeared to her. She hurried to a town in the hill country of Judea. Mary stayed with Elizabeth for about 3 months and then returned home. She went off in hiding. She remained in seclusion by herself, maybe just with her cousin for a little while. She had to leave home and all the distractions of home in order to prepare herself for what was to come. And what about this? The tomb. A place of darkness. A place of silence. Yet this is where God does the greatest work of saving and healing and transforming. Silence, I would argue, is the doorway to hope. Without it, we focus on all that's right there in front of us, and that removes the hope from our bones. You need silence. For Zechariah, silence was a gift. It was grace bestowed upon him. Now, during this time, I mentioned that we had found out Reese was going to be born early in 2017. I started reading a book about baby brains called Brain Rules for Baby. And I came across this, which blew my mind. If I were to give a single sentence of advice based on what we know about in utero development during the first half of pregnancy, it would be this. The baby wants to be left alone. Don't bother the baby. At least at first. Don't put headphones on the baby in the beginning. Don't try to talk. Just leave the child alone. From the baby's point of view, the best feature of life in the womb is its relative lack of distraction, stimulation, Netflix, conversations. It's dark, as sturdy as a bomb shelter, and much quieter than the outside world, and it needs to be. Once things get going, your little embryo's pre-brain will pump out neurons at the astonishing rate of 500,000 cells a minute. Start counting. That's more than 8,000 cells per second, a pace it will sustain for weeks on end. That is incredible. This is readily observable 3 weeks after conception, and it continues until about the midpoint of the pregnancy. A peaceful lack of interference is just what you would expect the baby to need. You know what this tells me? Babies need the silence, but so do we. You need the silence for your continued health and to keep hope alive in your bones. Otherwise, you're going to be pulled from one thing to the next. You're going to be pulled from the smoke alarm to the flies, to the distraction of the week over here, to the buzzing of your phone, to all the emails that constantly pour into your inbox, and you're going to simply focus on what's right there, what you can touch, and you're going to miss the hope and the dreams, the things that you are praying, desperately praying for deep within you. See, hope is based on the enduring belief that the smoke alarms and flies and New York State taxes will pass. Hope is based on the belief that what's right in front of you right now is temporary. And it's not the end of the story. What you are going through right now, as difficult as it might be, as difficult as it feels, hope comes into that moment and says, this isn't the end. This, too, shall pass. Doesn't mean it's not going to be difficult. Think about Jesus going through a death in order to get to the resurrection. Hope comes into those moments of death and says, there's more going on here than what you can see. There's a resurrection around the corner. Hold on. keep believing. Don't keep distracting yourself, making you believe that whatever you can touch is it. No, 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 no. There's something more going on here beyond what you can touch. The question for us this week, this was the question all the way back in 2016. I think it is still a relevant question for us today, whether we are in Advent or not. And the question is, where can you find intentional time of silence this week? Where can you carve out space for silence? A few moments here so that you can be grounded in something beyond the tangible. Here's how the story of Zechariah ends in Luke. They made signs to his father after John had been born, or this unnamed child at this point, after he'd been born, to find out what he would like to name the child. He asked for a writing tablet because he still couldn't speak. The child was born and he still couldn't speak. To everyone's astonishment, he wrote, "His name is John." And watch what happens. Immediately his mouth was opened and his tongue set free, and he began to speak, praising God. Yeah, his silence helped him hold on to what was true, to what was real. The smoke alarms, the flies, they'll pass. They feel so overwhelming, so true in the moment. They take all of your attention, but they're not the deepest truth of the universe. They're not the deepest truths that we hold on to within us. The truth that this too shall pass. It might feel like a death. It might feel like the waves are crashing over you, but they'll pass. Resurrection, healing, salvation is on its way. May you keep holding on to that truth. And may you carve out silence so that you can hold on to, so that you can trust in the things that are unseen, but the things that are no less true, the things beyond what you can touch in front of you. That is the story of Zechariah. This weird, odd, what in the world is God doing? Is this a punishment? No. Silence is a gift. It's grace.